B'siyata Deshmaya, we're going to learn Sukkah Daf Lamed Aleph, and we're going to start from the second line from the top of the Omid. Says the Gemara, Tonu Rabbonon, Sukkah Gezula. It's a brisa that says that if somebody steals a sukkah, we'll soon see what that means. How do you steal a sukkah? What part of the sukkah have you stolen and is considered a stolen object? But a sukkah gezula, v'amasakich b'shus harabim, if somebody puts up his sukkah in a public property, and that's also stealing from the public, Rabbi Eliezer says that the sukkah is posel, v'chachomim machshirim, and the chachomim say that the sukkah is actually kosher, and you can be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah in a sukkah gezula and in a masakich b'shus harabim. Omer of Nachman, Rav Nachman holds that the whole machlekes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachomim is only, that means Rabbi Eliezer only says that poisel, that's only b'shatekef es chaveroi, that's if you physically take your friend or take the owner of that sukkah, v'hoitzi'u misukosoi, and you remove him from the sukkah. The ground of the sukkah belongs to his friend, and karka einu nigzeles, as we've seen. And anything that's attached to the ground, it's got the same status as the ground, as property, immovable property, it's karka, and it's not nigzal. So in that case, there we have a machlekes that Rabbi Eliezer says that it is posel, and the Chachomim say that it's kosher. Rabbi Eliezer letame, and the reason Rabbi Eliezer says that it's posel is he's following his own reasoning. The Omar Rabbi Eliezer holds, Ein odom yitze yedei chivosei besukosei shel chaveri, that a sukkah which is sheula, which doesn't belong to you, you cannot be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. And we've already seen this on Daf Chov Zayin Amud Beis. Therefore, whichever way you hold this, it's going to be posel. I karka nigzeles, if you hold that it's possible, yes, to steal karka, that means when you take somebody else's property, it's considered that you've stolen it like movable objects, and then now it's no longer considered in the Rishus as belonging to the original owner, it's belonging to the person who's stealing it, then sukkah gezulahi. Then it's considered a sukkah gezula. And a sukkah gezula is not yours. Even though as far as kinyonim, you might say, I've acquired it, it's now, since it's stolen, it's now somewhat, so to speak, koina, it's mine. No, Rashi brings that Rav Eliezer holds that when it says in the Pasuk, Chag HaSukkah is ta'aseh lecho, it has to be mishalcho. It has to be that you made the sukkah with something that belongs to you, to the exclusion of a stolen sukkah and the exclusion of a borrowed sukkah. V'inami karka einu nigzeles. Even if you're going to say that you cannot steal the land itself, and all the while that you've stolen it, it still is considered as if it belongs to the original owners. You cannot steal it. The land belongs to the original owner now, after you've taken control over it, exactly the same as before. It's not like a movable object that you've taken something away from him. You can't take it anywhere. It's land. So if you hold that karka einu nigzeles, well then sukkah she'ulahi, then you're right, it may not have the status of a sukkah gezula, because you cannot steal it. It doesn't have the status of a stolen sukkah, but it's his sukkah, and you can't see it in his sukkah. Again, because Rabbi Eliezer holds that sukkah has to be yours. So it doesn't matter which way you hold it, if it's nigzeles and it has the status of gezula, or it's not nigzeles and has the status of she'ula, it's not yours and you're not yotze. V'rabbonon letamayu. And the Rabbonon who said in this brisa that sukkah gezula v'amasakich b'rishus harabim, the chachomim amachshirim, that's because they hold, omri, odom yotze dei chivosei b'sukosei shel chaveri. They hold that you can be yotze with a sukkah that belongs to somebody else. V'karka einu nigzeles. And the karka is, they hold that karka cannot be stolen, so it belongs to your friend. Belongs to your friend, then she'ulahi. Then it's borrowed, and they say that a borrowed sukkah, you're allowed to be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah with it. You can go into somebody else's sukkah and be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah. Avol, gozal eitzim, but what happens if you have a real stolen sukkah, and how do you steal a sukkah if karka eino nigzeles? So says the Gemara, that if you're gozal eitzim, which means that you've stolen the woods itself, and the woods themselves, it's not considered gezula, because you were koine it with a shinui maisa, as we saw before, that you, after you took it and after that person was misyayish, he's given up hope, you've changed it. You've turned it from logs, some pieces of wood, into a sukkah. It's got a new name. It used to be called wood, now it's called sukkah. And also we've seen that if you steal woods from somebody else and you put it into a building, into a structure, we're going to see later, there's a concept called takonas hashovim. In order to make it easy and possible for people to do tshuva and mend their ways, if you're going to force them to have to demolish their homes and give back the stolen materials, they're not going to be able to do tshuva. It's going to be too hard for them. So we say, it's okay, leave your home as it is, just pay for it. So for all these reasons, if gozal eitzim v'sikach bem, if you stole woods and you used them for a sukkah, divrei hakel ein lo elod me'eitzim, everybody agrees, says Rebbe, even Rebbe Eliezer agrees, this is Rav Nachman talking, even Rebbe Eliezer agrees, that in the case of gozal eitzim, ein lo elod me'eitzim, you yoitz to the mitzvah of sukkah, the sukkah is yours, you do not need to dismantle it, just pay him for what you owe him. Mimai, where do you see in the words of the Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachomim, where do you see within the words of the Braisa that a sukkah gezula, that Rebbe Eliezer poisel, the Chachomim Machshirim, is only talking about if you actually stole the sukkah itself, but if you stole woods and used it for the schach, that everybody, even Rabbi Eliezer, says it's kosher. Midik toni dumidur shusarabim, from the fact that the Braisa puts in one case gezula together with masakich b'shusarabim, together with somebody who makes a sukkah in public property. Maru shusarabim, in the same way as shusarabim, we're talking about karka lavdidehu, we're talking about that the land, the floor of the sukkah isn't his, and that's where there's a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer v'chachomim. Rabbi Eliezer says it's posel. Sukkanami, so too the case of sukkah, that Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible, is only talking about lav karka didehu, then it's talking about where the land belongs to your friend. If your land belongs to somebody else, then we say ta'aselecha, this is not yours. But if it's not the problem with the land, rather just the woods, you've taken the woods from somebody else and used it for your sukkah, there even Rabbi Eliezer will agree that even though you're not allowed to steal the woods, but Rabbi Eliezer will agree your sukkah is kosher. And even though we know that even according to the Rabbonon, there is a concept of a sukkah gezula, which you're not yoitza with, and this is something we've already discussed on Daf Chof Zayin, the question is, when? If you just kicked out the owners, and the sukkah is built on the land, and anything that's attached to the land has the same status as the karaka, as the floor, and we just said now, karaka einon igzeles, it's considered a sukkah she'ula. According to Rabbanon, sukkah she'ula is kosher. If you're going to say they stole the woods and built a sukkah with it, well, we just saw now that even according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's going to be kosher. So when do you have a case that because of mitzvah baba aveira, a sukkah gezula is going to be posel? And Rashi asks that here, and Rashi says it's talking about a movable sukkah, where you stole a whole sukkah. Not that you stole somebody else's materials and you put it into your sukkah, because then we say it'll be too hard for you to dismantle it, and we want you to be able to do teshuva and repent and return and to do what you have to do. We're talking about if somebody took a movable sukkah, for example, a sukkah on a wagon or a sukkah on the top of a boat, and he took the whole sukkah, which is not connected to the ground, and he stole that sukkah, there we say that the sukkah is nigzeles, and because he didn't actually do the effort of building the sukkah with these materials, he just stole the whole sukkah. In that case, there's no takonas hashovim, and he wasn't koinit, it's gozul. And since it's gozul, it's a mitzvah babavera, and in that case, the Rabbonon will say he's not yoitza. Continues the Gemara, Hahi Savta, there was this older woman, Savta is normally translated as a grandmother, an older woman, Da Asoyi Lekameda Rav Nachman. And she came before Rav Nachman, and this unfortunate story, what happened was that the household, the people who were working in the household of the Resh Gelusa, the leader of the exile at the time, had stolen her woods and used it to make a sukkah. So this woman came before Rav Nachman, Omro Leyan, said to Rav Nachman, Resh Gelusa, the head of the Golus, V'kulhu Rabbonon, and all the Chachomim to Bei Resh Gelusa who are residing with the Resh Gelusa, B'sukkah Gezula HaVayosva. They're sitting in a stolen sukkah, these are my woods. She was shouting, and Rav Nachman ignored her. Omrale, so she said to him, "Itza a woman dehavas leila avua, that her ancestor, her father, many generations back, referring to Avraham Avinu, he had klas mea v'tamnis ri'avdi, he had 318 slaves. Tzavcha kamaychu is shouting and is crying to you, v'le ashkechisu ba, and you're not responding, you're not taking us seriously." Omalu Rav Nachman said to the people around him, she's just screaming, don't worry about what she's saying, there's no value in what she's saying. The Resh Galusa, or the home of the Resh Galusa, whoever stole their woods, has to pay for the woods. But we do not need to dismantle the sukkah, and she has no claim that we are sitting in a sukkah gezula. And this is what we saw before. It's a takonas hashovim. This is discussed in Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Hey, that in order to make it easier for people to do tshuva, we did not require them to dismantle their buildings, their fixed structures, their permanent structures, and in order to give back the stolen materials, it's sufficient to just pay for them. Omer Ravina. Ravina says, "Hai kushura de metalalto." If somebody stole a beam and put it into his sukkah, which was stolen and is now in the sukkah, of the rabbonon takanta. The rabbonon made a special takana, mishum takonas morish. A morish is also a type of a crossbeam. They made the special takana, like we saw before, that when something is fixed into a permanent structure and having to dismantle it is a lot of effort and financial expense, then they did not require you to do that. And over here, since there's a mitzvah of sukkah, so as relative to the mitzvah of sukkah, a sukkah is the mitzvah requires it to be fixed for 7 days, and we're going to ask him to dismantle his sukkah that needs to be fixed for 7 days, he's going to lose his sukkah. They did not make him do that. Asks the Gemara Pshita, Maishno mi'etzim, what's the chiddush? You just said before that we know that you've got this halacha, that you said before that if somebody steals wood and makes and uses it for his sukkah, you only have to pay for it. You don't need to actually dismantle the sukkah and give it back. So what are you, Ravina, coming to impress on us? Says the Gemara, no. Even though we said before that if somebody steals wood, that if you steal woods and use it for your sukkah, you do not need to give it back. I may have thought, that's only regarding woods, because the poor person that the woods were stolen from, all they need to do is buy some new woods. Woods is a very available commodity. Give her the money, pay for it, and let them buy new woods. And then prevent the person who stole it from having to demolish his building. Avalhai, but this case here, Loishchicha, these beams, these kashura, it's not easy to find beams. The poor fellow that you stole the beams from, you're going to pay him, but he's going to have a hard time finding such a beam. I may have thought that Eimaloi, you don't say there's takonas morish, and you don't say that there's takonas hashovim, and you actually have to give back the item you stole. Kumash malon, that's the chiddush of Ravina. No, you don't have to. You can just pay for it and leave the beam in the structure. Says the Gemara, Hanamili, and this is all true, Begoy Shiva, only for the 7 days of Sukkos. The 7 days of Sukkos, you need your sukkah, and making you demolish it is similar to demolishing a fixed and permanent structure, which is too much damage to expect somebody to do. Avalabos or Shiva, but after Sukkos, when a typical sukkah is just considered as a temporary structure and not a major loss to have to dismantle it, in any case, sukkahs get dismantled, Hodr ba'enei, then you actually have to give the beam back. It's not sufficient to just pay for it. And there's a discussion in the Meforshim whether what determines on Sukkos, after Sukkos, does it depend on when the person who the wood was stolen from, the beams were stolen from, does it depend on the time that they come and request and demand that you pay them? That if they come on Yom Tov, you don't need to pay. If they come after, you don't need to give it back. And if they come after Yom Tov, you actually have to give it back. Or does it depend when you're actually paying? If you actually end up paying on Yom Tov, then it's enough to pay. You don't need to give the beam back. But if the time of payment is after Yom Tov, then it's not good enough to just give money. You have to give them their beam back. V'chobri betina. If, however, this beam was secured and fixed into the sukkah with cement, afilu la'achar shiva, even after sukkahs, nami yoiv le'idomi, it's enough to give back the money, because this is now considered a permanent structure, as if you would have put it into a house, and we do not expect the person to demolish it even after sukkahs. Continues the Gemara. Tana, we learnt in a braisa. Yoveish posel, this takes us back to the Mishnah on Daf Chof Tes Amud Beis that we started with on the Perek in the previous Daf, that lulav agozel vayoveish posel, a dried lulav is posel. Says the Braisa, Yoveish posel, that's the only other opinion of the Tanakama. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says that a dried lulav is kosher. Omar Rava. Rava explains as follows, and we're going to be discussing Rava at considerable length. Rava says as follows. Machlekes belulav. The whole machlekes is only regarding a lulav, that the Chachomim say that a dried lulav is possible, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. The Rabbonon Sovri, the Rabbonon hold makshinon lulav le'estrug. We compare lulav to estrug. Ma estrug, in the same way as the estrug boya hodor. It has to be beautiful. And a dried estrug is not beautiful. And how do we know an estrug has to be beautiful? Because it's actually the phrase in the Torah used to refer to an estrug. It's pre-eats hodor, a fruit which is beautiful. So ma estrug boya hodor, as it says in the pasuk, af lulav so to lulav, boya hodor also needs to have lulav. It's a type of a hekesh, and that's why the Chachomim say that a lulav, which is yavish, is pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda argues and says, loy makshinon lulav le'estrug. He says that in his tradition, he didn't have this gezeirah shava between lulav and estrug, and it's true that estrug needs to be hodor, a lulav doesn't need to be estrug, and doesn't need to be hodor. Aval estrug, but regarding the estrug itself, divrei hakel hodor ba'inon, everybody agrees that since it says in the pasuk, pre-eats hodor, it needs to be a beautiful estrug. Says the Gemara. And this is now a discussion on Rava. Rava just said now, to explain what the Rabbi Yehuda that says that a lulav which is yovish is kosher, or belulav loy boya Rabbi Yehuda hodor, can you possibly suggest that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need hodor by lulav? What none? We learnt in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Oimir ye'agdenu milamayla. This was our Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek that says that if the leaves are separated, they're not lying, the leaves of the lulav are not lying nicely and flatly on the spine of the lulav, they've just spread out like branches, the Rabbi Yehuda says, tie them together, that the tops of the leaves should be tied, that they should all be close to the spine as a closed lulav would be, and then it's kosher. My tama, can we not take it for granted that the reason Rabbi Yehuda says you should tie it together, lav, is it not mishum deboya hodor, because it needs to be, the lulav needs to be presented beautifully, and when it's all spread out, it's not so nice, and therefore tie it together. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda does need hodor. So therefore, for the same token, a lulav which is yovish should be posel, says the Gemara Loi. No, that's not the reason why Rabbi Yehuda says you have to tie the leaves. Kedoktoni taimer, Rabbi Yehuda oimer mishum Reb Tarfoin. The reason you have to tie them together is because Rabbi Yehuda's learnt, like Reb Tarfoin did, that it says in the Pasuk regarding the lulav, how is the lulav called in the Torah? Kapois tamorim. What does kapois tamorim mean? It means it's the branches of a date palm. But the word kapois comes from the word kofus, which means tied up. Kapois tamorim, you read it, it can also be read, the letters of kapois mean kofus, tied, vimhoya porud, and if the leaves are spread out, yichpesenu, make sure to tie them together. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says you have to tie them, but not because it needs to be hodor. Asks the Gemara of a loy boya hodor? Are you suggesting that according to Rabbi Yehuda you don't need hodor? And as Rav explained, that's why a lulav which is yovish, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is kosher? Vot nan. Did we not learn in a Mishnah? We're going to learn about this on Daf Lamed Vav, that ein oigdin es halulav elo b'minoi. When you tie the three species, the lulav, the adasim, and the aravos together, you should use a b'minoi. You should use only a part of the lulav itself, the species of lulav, use that to tie the three species together, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And don't use something which is not similar to the lulav. my time, lav mishum debaya hador. Can we not assume that the reason Rabbi Yehuda says when tying the lulav with hadasim and aravos, use lulav so it should look nice, and don't use something else which is doesn't look so nice? So you see that you need hador. You need hador. Why is yavish kosher? Says the Gemara loy. That's not the reason Rabbi Yehuda says you should use lulav branches or lulav leaves to tie the three species together. Dehama Rava. Rava says afilu besiv, you can even use something which doesn't look like a lulav, like a piece of the palm vine. Vafilu beikra dedikli, you can even use a piece of the trunk of the date of the palm, which doesn't look anything similar to a lulav at all. And you can use that as well to tie it. So it's clearly not because of hador. Why indeed does Rabbi Yehuda say that you should tie it with one of the species of lulav, which includes a palm vine, includes the ikra d'dikla, the trunk of the tree? But it's obviously not because of hador, because it doesn't look nice to use that part of the palm tree. So why would Rabbi Yehuda say tie it using something of the palm tree? Hasam de kosova, Rabbi Yehuda holds lulav tzorich eged. The Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's a requirement. It's essential that you actually tie the lulav together with the hadasim and aravos. It's a machlokes whether we saw on the flam and domed base is a machlokes if lulav tzorich eged or not tzorich eged. Is it essential that you bind the three minim together or not? Rabbi Yehuda says it is, which means the Torah says bundle the three species together. V'maisa min achrin, if you're going to bundle it with a different species, havalei chamisha minim, then together with the estrog, in total you'll have five species, not four species. And that's no good, that's bal toisif. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to add on the dimensions of the mitzvahs that are given in the Torah, and therefore make sure you use the same mean, the species, the type of lulav to tie it, and then including the tie itself, you won't have more than four species. Says the Gemara, ube'esrog miboyer of Yehuda hador. As we explained before, that the whole machlokes whether the lulav lulav hayovish is kosher or pasul is dependent on whether you learn from esrog that it needs to be hador. But everybody says that esrog itself needs to be beautiful, as it says pre-eitz hador. So we're going to question that now. Vatanya, did we not learn in the Braisa? Arba'as minim shebelulav, the four species of the lulav. Kashem she'ein poichasin mehem, kach ein mesifin alehem. One statement in the Braisa. In the same way as you're not allowed to take less than four species, you're not allowed to take more than four species. Another statement in the Braisa. Loi motzo esrog, if for whatever reason you cannot find an esrog, lo yovi, you shouldn't bring loi porish, a porish type of fruit, v'lo yirimoin, and not a pomegranate, v'lo yidova acher, nor any other type of fruit. Don't try and substitute esrog for anything else. Another statement. Kmushim, if they are withered, if the esrog is withered somewhat, ksherim, nonetheless, it's still a kosher esrog. However, if it's yuvashim, if the esrog is dry, psulim, then it's posel. Rabbi Yehuda says, af yuvashim, even dried up estrogim are kosher. You just said now that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that a dried up lulav is kosher is because you don't learn hodor of estrog to hodor of lulav, but hodor of estrog exists. Here we have Rabbi Yehuda who says explicitly that a dried estrog is kosher. V'omer Rabbi Yehuda even said, Maisa b'bnei krochim, it used to be that in those cities or those villages where the arba minim were very hard to come by, there were no orchards there, there were no paradisim for the estrog trees, shahoyu moirishin, they would inherit es lulavim lebnei b'neim, they would give their arba minim to their children, to their grandchildren, one generation after the next, one year after the next. Those estrogim were clearly dried, nonetheless, that's what they would do. Omru loy, so they said to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, don't bring me proof from there, you bring proof from what happened to the Bnei Krochim. Ein Shas Hadchak Raya, there is different because there was just nothing else available. And when they had to do something as a last resort when nothing else is available, you cannot bring proof from there to anything. Baktonimius, but leaving the Bnei Krochim out, Rabbi Yehuda said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Yuvashim Ksherim, that a dried estrog is kosher. My love, estrog, do we not assume that when Rabbi Yehuda says that Af Yuveishim, these words, Af Yuveishim, it's true the Braisa started with Arba Minim Shebelulav, the four species of the lulav, but can we not assume that when Rabbi Yehuda says Yuveishim is kosher, he means Estrog? So you see, an Estrog Yavish is kosher. How can you say everybody agrees Estrog needs to be Hador and it's cannot be dried? Says the Gemara, Loi. You made the wrong assumption. A lulav, he's actually referring to lulav. Lulav Yovish, we know, Rabbi Yehuda says, we said that before, that Yovish, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. So when it says at the end of the Braisa that Af Yoveshim, it's kosher, it's not referring to Estrog. There, everybody says it mustn't be Yovish. It's referring to the Lulav. Says the Gemara, Omar Mar. And now we're going back to a few of the statements in the Braisa we just learned. We saw in the Braisa, Kashem Shein Poichasin Mehen Kach in Masifin Alem. In the same way as you're not allowed to take on Sukkos less than four species, you're also not allowed to take more than four species. Asks the Gemara Pshita. That goes without saying. There's no element of Chiddush in that. What are you trying to teach us? Says the Gemara, no. Mao de Teima I may have thought. Hoyel v'omar of Yehuda, Lulav Tzorich Eged. Since Rabbi Yehuda says that a lulav needs to be bound with hadasim and aravos, v'imaisim mina achrina. And if you're going to take a fifth species, you've got the estrog, which is standalone, an estrog in one hand. You've got, on the other hand, the lulav, hadasim, aravos, tied together. I may have thought if you take a fifth species, a fifth something else, and you hold it with the lulav, you don't tie it in with the lulav, then it's definitely bal toisif. It's definitely ein meisifin. Then there's no chiddush. But I may have thought that since lulav needs igud, the virtue of the fact that you're not tying this fifth type with the lulav and the other two, with the lulav hadassah and aravos, maybe we can just ignore it. It's as if the lulav with the three minim is one entity, and together with the estrog is four species, and what you're holding in your hand at the same time, not tied with the lulav, is something independent and does not infringe in the way you're doing the mitzvah of lulav. Kumash Malon, that's what the Braisa is coming to tell us. No. Make sure you're not holding in your hand anything else besides for the lulav and the arba minim. Continues the Gemara Omar Mar, another statement from that Braisa, that loy motza esrog, if for whatever reason you can't find a kosher esrog, loy yovi, loy rimoin, v'loy porish, v'loy udova arche, don't bring anything else in place of an esrog. Asks the Gemara Pshita, of course you can't. The Torah says you have to take an esrog. You can't take a pomegranate or something else. Says the Gemara, no. Mao de Tema, I may have thought, Laisi, bring another type of, another species, another type of a fruit. Ki heicha de loy tishkach teiras esrog, in order that people shouldn't forget that there is a concept of esrog. Komash malon. So that's what the price is impressing on us, that zimnin denofik churva minei, that sometimes harm could come from taking the wrong thing, not taking an estrog. The osi lemisrach, you'll get used to using a pomegranate instead of an estrog without realizing you cannot really do the mitzvah of arba minim with a pomegranate, and you're not going to realize that, and you'll start using that even when you do have an estrog. And therefore they said, the price says, if you don't have an estrog, you can't take an estrog, don't take anything else in its place. Continues the Gemara, and now we're going back to what we started with here with Rava, that we saw there was a machlekes between the Chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda by a lulav that was Yovish. The Tanakhama said it was posel, Rabbi Yehuda said it was kosher. Rava explained that everybody agrees that Esrog HaYovish is posel, because it says Hodor in the posel, and the question is just, do we learn lulav from Esrog or not? And now the Gemara is going to challenge that. Toshema, Esrog HaYoshon, an old Esrog, a dried Esrog, posel is posel, says the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. So you see that even by Esrog, Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher when it's dry. So, and that's clearly not how Rava explained. Tiyuvta de Rava, Tiyuvta, indeed, there's a refutation here against Rava, who said that regarding Esrog, everybody agrees that you need Hodor and it's posel. No, Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. Asks the Gemara, V'loi boy Hodor? Are you really suggesting that according to Rabbi Yehuda does not need Hodor by Esrog? V'anan t'nan. Did we not learn in a Mishnah on Daf Lamed Daled Omud Beis, Hayorik Kikarati, an Esrog that is so green like a leek, that Rabbi Meir says nonetheless it's kosher, Rabbi Yehuda poisel, Rabbi Yehuda says it's posel, Lav Mishum de boy Hodor? Is it not because he says that you need to have a beautiful Esrog? says the Gemara Loi. Mishum de Loi Gomar Peira. It's proof that it's not yet ripe. So to speak, you can say this is not yet an Esrog. It's not yet a ripened Esrog, and therefore it's not valid for Arba Minim. Toshima, we learnt in a Braisa, Shi'ur Esrog Cotton. What is the size of the smallest Esrog that you're allowed to take? Rav Meir Oimer Ke'egris, Rav Meir says as small as a nut. Rabbi Yehuda says, Kabeitza, it has to be at least the size of an egg. Lav mishum debaya hodor. Is it not because Rabbi Yehuda says it needs to have some level of beauty to it, and if it's smaller than the size of an egg, it's not a beautiful Esrog? Says the Gemara Loi, mishum deloi gomar peira. Again, if it's smaller than the size of an egg, then it's proof that the Esrog is not yet ripe, and this is not the Esrog that the Torah wanted us to take with the lulav. Tashima, says the Gemara, ubegodil. We're going to see this also later on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. What's the size of the largest Esrog that one's allowed to take? Rabbi Yehuda says the largest Esrog you can take is a size that you could hold two Esrogim that size in one hand. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, afilu echod b'shtei yodov, even if you need two hands to hold the one Esrog, it's also kosher. My time, can we not assume that the reason Rabbi Yehuda says it shouldn't be larger than the size that you could hold two of them in one hand is lav mishum deboya hodor? Is it not because it needs to be beautiful? Says the Gemara Loi, given to Omar Rabbah, since Rabbah says there's a halacha that Esrog b'smoil, the lulav b'yamin, that you have to hold the Esrog in your left hand, and the lulav with the hadasim and the aravos in your right hand, zimnin de michle filet, and sometimes by mistake you'll take the lulav in the left hand and the Esrog in the right hand, v'osi l'afuchinhu, and you'll want to switch hands, v'osi l'fsule. And if you have an Esrog that's so big that certainly if you need two hands to hold one Esrog, but if it's larger than being able to hold two of those Esrogim in one hand, how are you going to switch over the lulav to the Esrog? How are you going to change the hands? And if you're going to try and change hands, the Esrog may fall down, v'osi l'fsule, and it might become posel. When it falls down, it will get dented, and there'll be a piece will come off the Esrog, and it will be posel. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says, make sure that it's not too big. Says the Gemara, and this is the million-dollar question, Ve'elel Rabbi Yehuda Hoksiv Hodor. Well, let's go back to the basics, to the Chumash. The Chumash says an Esrog is called Pre-Eitz Hodor. That means you need to have a beautiful Esrog. So how can you suggest that Rava doesn't need to have Hodor? And this is really a question, how can you, Rabbi Yehuda, say that an Esrog which is Yovish is kosher? The Torah says it needs to be a beautiful Esrog. Says the Gemara that the word Hodor has a number of different explanations. One of them is it should be beautiful. That's how the Rabbonon learn. Rabbi Yehuda says that the word Hodor doesn't mean beautiful. It means Ahu Hador Be'ilone Mishona Lishona. How do you know which fruit is actually referred to by pre-eight Hodor? What is this Esrog? What we know is Esrog. What fruit is called Esrog? Well, we know it's what we call Esrog, but the Torah didn't use the term Esrog. That's why it says Hodor. It's a fruit that stays on the tree from year to year. The only fruit that does that is the Esrog. So the word Hodor is actually impressing on us that it's the amount of time that the fruit lives on the tree, and that's what teaches us what the Esrog is. But the word Hodor does not mean to tell us it has to be a beautiful Esrog. Continues the Gemara. We saw in the Mishnah on Daf Chof Tesamud Beis, that shel asher of a shel ir anidachas posel, that if you have a lulav that is being used for avodah zarah, or it's from a lulav from a city that has everything in it has to be burnt because it's a city that whose residents got seduced to do avodah zarah, it's posel. Says the Gemara, v'shel asherah posel, that the Mishnah says that a lulav of asherah is posel. Asks the Gemara, can that be? V'ha'omar Rava, did Rava not say that lulav shel avodah zarah lo yitoil? You should not use a lulav that was used to serve avodah zarah, to possibly to sweep the floor in front of the avodah zarah. They would use lulavim to sweep, or if the way to serve the avodah zarah is by passing the lulav in front of it or throwing the lulav onto it, wherever it may be, a lulav that served avodah zarah lo yitoil, you should not use it on for the arba minim. Why? Because it's just inappropriate. Rashi says, "De mois legavoya." It's repulsive to Hashem to use something that was used for idol worship to use it for this mitzvah. However, vim notal, if you did use it, kosher, it's kosher. And even though this Avodah Zarah is Isuri Hanoi, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it, but we know that doing mitzvahs is not to derive benefit. Mitzvahs lav lihonis nitnu. We'll see about this in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Ches. And since the mitzvahs are not intended to give us any physical benefits and pleasure, therefore there would be nothing wrong with using an Avodah Zarah to do a mitzvah. So how can the Mishnah say that Shel Asherah is posel? Rava said explicitly that if you used it, it's kosher. Says the Gemara, Hocha ba'asherah d'moisha oskinon. Here we're not talking about regular Avodah Zarah, which is only Osar Ba'anah. We're talking here about the Asherah mentioned to Moshe Rabbeinu, that when they go into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to burn all the Avodah Zarahs. Va'ashereyem tisrufun ba'esh. Once there's a requirement to burn it, then we say that it's as if it's burnt already. And if it's the kitusei michtas shiurei, since you have to burn it and we view it as if it's burnt, and therefore it's as if it's been crushed, and it's like ashes and doesn't have any measure. And since it has no measure, then the lulav has to have a measure. 3 tvachim plus 1, 4 tvachim, we'll soon learn about that. It needs to have a minimum size. As soon as you say it's as good as burnt, it has no size. It's kitusei mechtas shi'ura. Daikanami, proof to this is diktoni, dumi d'irani k'tachas. The Mishnah puts asherah together with irani dachas. In the same way as irani dachas has to be burnt, the lulavim, they have to be burnt, so too the asherah is not talking about a regular avodah zarah. A regular avodah zarah doesn't need to be burnt, it's just osur ba'anah. And since mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, if you used it, you were yotza. But we're talking here about the type of avodah zarah which needs to be burnt. If it needs to be burnt, kitusei mechtas shi'ura, then the shi'ur, the measure of it, is as if it's been crushed. Shema mino, so that's proof that that's what the Mishnah is talking about. And Emir Tz Hashem, in the next shi'ur, we're going to continue from here.